welcome back to another edition of the Palace Way podcast. As always, I am your host, Pat, coming at you live from sunny Tampa, Florida, with my other host here, Bruno. Bruno, how we doing?
Absolutely fantastic, mate. How about you?
Can't complain. The weather's nice right now, so gonna spend some time talking about Palace with you guys. One of our more recurring guests, Bobby Manzi. Bobby, how you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. Hope you well too.
Very well, very well. And we have our last guest here, last but certainly not least, sports reporter, sports writer, sports editor, and most importantly, for the sake of this podcast, Palace supporter, Ed Mallion. Ed, thank you so much for coming on.
Never a problem. How are we doing?
Doing great. And I know you're in America as well, like I am, and we're celebrating Labor Day weekend here, kind of the unofficial close of the summer, kind of coincides with another closing of a summer item, the transfer window. Bobby, how do you think this transfer window went? What are your thoughts, main takeaways, and anything you got going on?
Yeah, you know what? I think a lot of people were very stressed going into the final week. There was a lot of work to be done, but as it's finished, I think it was excellent business. I mean, I kept looking for, when I was writing my transfer window piece earlier on, little songs I could throw in there, little Oasis nodes or even the Quarter Vibe nodes for Lacroix. But, you know, I just thought the business was excellent. I think Nketiah and Sarr are players we chased for a long time. I think Lacroix and Chalobah adds the pace to the back line that we really need. And I just think we look like a much stronger and more cohesive unit. I think, yes, we didn't get the number 10 we needed, and yes, we didn't get the left wing back. But on the whole, I think the business has been pretty exceptional.
Yeah, to review that, there were 7 incomings in, an 8th in Louis Molden, goalkeeper that's going to be mostly for the academy. 5 permanents in Eddie Nketiah, Maxime Lacroix, Ismaila Sarr, Chadi Riad, Daichi Kamada, and then our 2 loans of Matt Turner, near and dear to my heart, of course, and also Trevo Chalobah. Ed, want to throw this over to you. As a fan or as just someone that's been in the business, what did you think of the window? Would you, if you'd like to give it a scale of 1 to 10, grade it out, go ahead. And if there was any concerns that maybe we left some unfinished business or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was quite important. You know, the club a few years ago decided that it wanted to set itself on this course of being a team that buys young talent, develops them and sells them on, gives them that Premier League platform. And if you look at you know, the sales of Elise, the potential sale of Gehi, obviously, which we declined, but we could have sold him for a club record fee. We're starting to see the fruits of that, like where the players that we've bought have developed and they have given us value and they have been sold on or could have been sold on in Gehi's case. So I think from that point of view, it's incredibly encouraging that like the strategy that they chose, you know, which you have to stick to. You can't just start on this path and then suddenly change your mind after a year. You have to stick to it. It's very promising that it's starting to bear fruit. And I think that Adam Wharton is kind of the next wave of those sorts of talents, right? Who you pick up for 20 and you'd hope to sell him for 50, 60, 70, 80 million, I'd say, in 18 months to 2 years time. Eze could have gone, you'd think, but you know, my question with him is always how many clubs are going to spend what is needed, 60 million odd, to buy him this summer. I couldn't see a buyer that made sense. So we're going to see that. You know, I think the interesting one for me is Nketiah. It's a lot of money for a 25-year-old. You'd hope he's approaching peak, but I don't think anyone can definitively say that they know how good he is, right? So it is a bit of a gamble for a player who is kind of in a different part of their developmental curve to a lot of the players who you might expect to sign. I love the sign of Chadi Riad. I thought that was also smart to get ahead of any potential sale of Anderson or Gehi. In the end, it was Anderson. But 21 years old, can obviously play from Barcelona Academy, went to Real Betis, played well there last season. So you've got a really versatile and talented centre-back. Maxence Lacroix, I can't say I've seen too much of him play, but obviously highly rated. I would say if you want to put like a I personally am a bit of a fundamentalist that I don't think the coach should ever be involved in the transfer process. I believe this because the incentives are different for the coach who wants success now than they are for the sporting director and the club's owners who want long-term sustained success and financial health. And you'll know this from like the NFL, for example, like letting the coach be involved in the draft. The coach is always going to go for a player who can contribute straight away, because they don't want to be fired. They don't want to get like put out of their job in 6 months' time. Whereas the team wants to get the best player with the highest ceiling possible. The Kamada signing and the Lacroix signing, I think you could argue the negative side of those is, have we let a bit too much into the coach having a voice in the transfer process, which historically doesn't tend to be good for a number of reasons, especially if you play a specific system, which Glasner does. Like Antonio Conte at Spurs is always an example, or at Chelsea, where he just signed loads of wingbacks and then he gets fired 6 months later after incinerating the entire training ground. And you've got this, all these left backs, and you've got a new coach who comes in and wants to play four at the back. So it's a balanced scorecard, I'd say. I wouldn't give it a number or grade or anything, because you know we haven't seen half of these players perform yet. But I think that they did a good job. My one question coming out of this is contract extensions. What do we do with Tariq Mitchell's contract? What do we do with Gehi's contract now that he's ticking down and 2 years left? I just don't know. I don't know how you preserve his value. Like, if he gets sold next summer, it's not going to be for anything close to what Palace turned down this year. So I don't know if anyone has any thoughts on the Gehi contract, but the transfers themselves, I'm fairly happy with. I just think, you know, we also could have got a left wing back as well.
Yeah, just picking up on a couple of things. So Tariq Mitchell's contract isn't a problem because he's tied down until 2027, not the reported 2025 or whatever it is. Then you've got Gehi, which I think is more, you're just selling for £50 million next summer rather than 70, which is still really good profit. And you get another season of Gehi as you try and kick on. So I don't think that's necessarily another huge problem. The one thing that I would say is, I totally agree with everything you said, but on the transfer front, I do think it's good that we brought in Kamada and Lacroix as well, which are probably Glasner additions, because as much as our philosophy is the long-term additions to make sure players value appreciates, it also just gives us a bit more security in that we will have some short-term success, because Glasner's got the players he wants and he's got players he trusts in that system.
But I mean, I don't think you've seen anything from Kamada's performances so far that would suggest that I've been very disappointed with him so far. I was at Brentford. I watched the other two games since I got back, and I think like he looks decent without the ball, but in possession, we haven't seen it so far. And in fact, the substitution of him coming on against West Ham probably cost us both of those goals.
Yeah, but so against West Ham, I would have said that he was brought on out of position. And that was probably half the issue. He was playing as a defensive midfielder when he's a 10. And I said it at the time, and I got a bit of slack for it, criticising Glasner. But I thought that the one of the issues like against West Ham and even against Brentford, in a way, was his game management. But certainly, I think when he's played in that 10, as you say, off the ball, he's really good. I just think he needs to adapt to the speed of the Premier League a bit more, because he shows really good glimpses, but it's just not consistent throughout 90 minutes. So I think that's something we'll improve in. But yeah, I do think there's certainly a player in him, and I think it's good that we've given the manager some players that he's familiar with and that we can build a system around, if you like.
Yeah, and with Kamada too, I think it's important that not only does he have to get used to this league, but his teammates at Palace need to get used to the way he plays, and they need to realize that he's not the same style of player as who's been there last spring, where Elise was a player that you could put the ball to his feet and he could do whatever he wanted with it. He was a little magical when he had the ball at his feet. He also liked to make some runs in behind at times. Kamada's not going to do that. He's going to play quick one-twos. He's going to try to maybe make some late box crashing runs, but he's not going to be somebody that uses his pace to get behind anybody. So I think it's important to remember that just as he needs to get used to everything going on in the Premier League, his teammates need to get used to him. And I do think that that's something that the international window, which we'll talk about in a little bit, is going to certainly help him with. The other thing with the transfer window, I think Nketiah is the most probably well-known player to most of Crystal Palace supporters, being from South London, being with Arsenal for as long as he was. Ed, is that something that you foresee a slight position change, a shape tweak, where maybe we go two strikers at the top with Eze behind? Or do you think he's there just more of as insurance in case Mateta isn't firing as he was last spring?
Yeah, I think you can look at it either way. Certainly, you know, we saw Edouard be used as kind of another forward, where he wasn't necessarily leading the line like Mateta was. So I think there is a feeling that out of possession, the positions they've been taking up are very much almost like a flat front three at times. So if you had Nketiah on the left of that flat front, front three. Like, he's not a wide player, but we don't really have a wide player in that front three, do we? So it could be that. They could rotate the triangle. It could be Eze behind two. I don't think Glasner has a huge history of doing that, but that would be an interesting shape. I quite like that shape. I think that's a pretty smart way of playing football. It's easy to recruit when you have that shape as well, because it's hard. Some of the positions that it's hard to find in the transfer market, if you talk to sporting directors and owners and stuff, it's hard to find strikers who can play up front on their own. It's hard to find single pivot defensive midfielders. It's hard to find centre backs who can really spread the ball from a back four. So if you play the 3-4-1-2, you kind of get rid of all of those pinch points in the recruitment process. So Nketiah up front alongside Mateta, I like the sound of that. Mateta has had an incredible purple patch in the spring, but otherwise has struggled to score goals for the entire time he's been at the club. So I mean, I'd rather have this sort of iconic moments that he's had incredible moments. The last minute goal against Leicester like stands out, but like there's tons of them. And it's special to have those when you're a player at the club. But he's also pushing for a new contract. Do you reward him based on 15 games worth of form, or do you reward him based on the whole body of work? It's kind of a difficult decision. So bringing in attacking talent, you can never have enough. So my really kind of garbled answer to that would be, I think we're going to see a bit of both. I think we'll see him as a support player, but I also think that ideally you'd have him and Mateta on the field, because that would be a true handful, I'd hope, for most Premier League defences.
Yeah, Glasner did try that formation a little bit here and there at Frankfurt. A lot of the times when he was rotating the squad when they had some Europa League competitions looming. It doesn't necessitate too much of a change of the system. You know, you have your back three or back five, however we want to call it, and then you have your double pivot of midfielders there. That really doesn't change. You can still lead the press from the front with three guys. It's just kind of the, like you said, are you inverting the triangle? Are you kind of rotating it a little bit? But it wouldn't require too much of a change. Not like we're talking about going from our formation now to a 4-4-2 or a 4-2-3-1 or something like that, which does give me a little bit of hope that they'll be able to bed themselves in and find that chemistry that we need. Bobby, do you have anything else you want to add to the transfer window?
Yeah, it was just picking up on the Mateta and Nketiah point. Now, I think it's really difficult, knowing the way that Crystal Palace work, to think that Nketiah is going to come in for £30 million and not necessarily get straight in the starting 11. So I think the only way to work it is the change in shape with Mateta and Nketiah playing as a two up top, because I'm not necessarily sure that he would work as one of those inverted tens, if you like. So I do think that the change in shape will have to happen at some point, where it's because JP can't sit on the bench the way he's playing, because he's scoring goals, so there's no reason to drop him. So it, for me, it's got to be Eze behind Nketiah and Mateta.
I think what really excites me is the prospect of Nketiah and Mateta being able to draw defenders away from Eze, because something that I think Eze's struggled with at the start of the season is finding space to do what he does. He needs pockets to run into, and he needs to see the pitch in front of him. And with Mateta being, a little bit less fit and less willing to contest for balls and jump up and generally having less energy, he's getting less of that space. And because Kamada is such a player that likes to move off the ball, but in his own way to create his own space, I think Eze's still not getting the full benefit of Kamada's movement as he would relative to Michael Olise. So bringing in someone like Nketiah, who's going to play off Mateta, will suddenly sort of create this immediate relationship between the two, where defenders suddenly have a lot more to worry about. And if you've got someone like Wharton or Lerma or even Decore arriving late into the box beyond that front three as well, you suddenly have a lot more to give opposition defenders to worry about. Something I've personally noticed watching Palace quite a lot actually over the years is we tend to struggle to put players in the box relative to other teams. I was watching Aston Villa this weekend, and that's something they do brilliantly. And with the players we have some forward-minded players in Daniel Munoz. Even Tyrick Mitchell these days is doing a really good job at trying to adapt, even if it's leaving us more exposed. I think we'll get onto the issues that that's causing. But I think bringing in Nketiah could give Eze a lot more freedom and kind of unlock the true attacking potential that we have in our side. There are multiple ways we could have done it. Bringing in a more Elise-like player was another alternative. But I think in the meantime, with Mateta's future relatively uncertain, I think this could be a really exciting prospect for us.
No, I think you're right. And what I would say is if you, against Chelsea on Sunday, in the first half, Malagusto was just able to single-handedly mark Eze and just totally close him out of the game. He was just able to stay with him the whole time and just make him ineffective in the first half because we had nothing on that other side. So if you give him that more central role behind the front two, I think he could become extremely, extremely effective, and it could be damaging for many defences in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think my only real immediate concern with Eze is I think he sometimes struggles as a sole playmaker, but obviously he wasn't getting too many assists last season. He actually didn't assist any of Michael Olise's goals, while Olise was very much the creator for Eze's. But yet again, I do think that danger created by the duo of Nketiah and Mateta with Munoz, with players like Wharton or Lerma, could create the space that Eze needs to be a more effective playmaker.
And I think Nketiah is relatively effective on the ball as well, so you could almost get a bit of a link up there between Eze and Nketiah as well, which could then just give Eze a bit more license and then get his numbers of playmaking up.
The way Glasner has talked about it as well, as like having a bit more of a blend of talents, like, you know, Star, who we've not really discussed that much, came in for, I think it was about 14-15 million. I don't mind that as a signing, long-term target, obviously, of Dougie Freeman. Probably, you know, should be around peak age now. Ended up playing up front at the end against Chelsea, but I think he'll play kind of in one of those two support roles. Notionally more of a wide guy who is a dribbler. And that's going to be like a different sort of player again to what Nketiah brings, to what Mateta brings, to what Eze brings. We've got Matheus França to come back at some point, who's this huge question mark, who notionally could be the Elise replacement, but could be someone who plays 15 games for us and never really fulfills his potential. Like, we just don't know what that's going to be. So I think it seems like he wants a blend, just from the little pieces he said. I'd say, like, I wanted Rakitić to get a chance, someone like that. I think it's fine for them to go out on loan. I think, actually, you know, we're talking about loaning players out. I think Palace have done a good job this year. If you look at, you know, Championship clubs, coming in for our players, Ebuwe, Ahmed is going to get regular football, Joe Whitworth's going to get regular football, David Ozo is going to get regular football. So I'm, like, pretty happy with that. The loan I don't particularly understand, and maybe someone's got a view on this, is Chalobah, quite honestly. But a loan without an option to buy, I don't know what that does for a club in Palace's situation. If you're a club fighting relegation, I understand it, because the intrinsic financial value of remaining in the Premier League is huge. For a club like Palace, what's the purpose of bringing Trevor Chalobah in on loan for a season?
I do agree with that. I think they do. Maybe they looked at when Thomas Tuchel was there, and he probably had one of his better seasons at that right-sided central defense role in a back three. But I agree with your point completely. I think we're past the point of developing kind of big six clubs without any benefit in it for us other than a season. You could make the argument that perhaps we're going to try to make that a permanent deal at the end of the year, but that's kind of a catch-22, because the better the season he has for us, the higher the fee is going to be that they ask for. So I'm completely in agreement with you there. I do think there were some positives and some negatives, but I think there were some more positives, much more positives than negatives. I would have liked us to do more our business a little earlier. I would have liked us to perhaps maybe get some wing-back depth, but overall, I think we have a lot to be happy about and a lot to look forward to for the season when it comes to our new arrivals. And I think it's an important reminder to people to make sure that you're always waiting till the end of something to pass judgment for it. Don't be in the middle of the window. Wait till the end of something to pass judgment for it, which perfectly segues us to that match on Sunday at Stamford Bridge, a tale of two halves. The first half, we saw Chelsea keep possession, kind of do what they needed to do. In the second half, we saw Palace make some changes, make some inclusions that were really necessary, and steal a point from that, perhaps, by a nice Eze goal. So, Ed, what are your takeaways from Chelsea? What did you like in that second half? What changes do you think were the things that kind of were able to get us back into that match?
You know what? I thought the second half was really good, considering I feared the worst at halftime, especially because they've got so much to bring, you know. this our bench won't always be this weak, but there was a lot of kids. I mean, I love seeing the academy kids getting the team, but you know, they're just filling the bench at the moment. They're not actually getting on the pitch. And when I saw the bench, I feared the worst a little, because Chelsea is very well known and have about 55 first team players that they can bring into the situation. And at half time, we've been battered in the first half. Madueke and Malo Gusto did a brilliant job down the right on Tyrick Mitchell. It does seem to me that like teams target Tyrick Mitchell. And I thought it was interesting that we were looking to acquire competition for him or backup for him, where I think that maybe we could be looking to upgrade on him. I wonder if he might, you know, I don't know. I'm just not sure. When you see like these games where teams richly target him and then get so much joy, you know, I'm not sure if we can carry on just with one guy who can play in that position. So perhaps Chalobah should be training at left wing back, so we do have a backup there. But I was worried about that. I thought second half, obviously, a completely different thing. Nathaniel Klein was superb as a centre back again, as he was last season when he was pushed into that position, I thought. But really, it's just having a player like Eze. And the game against Brentford, he could have had a hat trick, and he just didn't. You know, like we sometimes like underestimate variance and luck in life, not just in sports. But Barry Eze really could have had a hat trick in that first game of the season, and he could have scored against West Ham. And instead, he comes into the game with zero goals, and he pulls that out of the bag, and that's what he's capable of. And that's why he, with Adam Wharton, are our most talented players. And I thought those two was superb in the end, and actually without those two, that was potentially a 2-0, 3-0, 4-0 sort of defeat. And also, I've got to say, the player I've not been kindest to in the past, because I think Sam Johnston was a really good goalkeeper, and I don't know why we had to go and spend all that money on Dean Henderson. Johnston's gone now, fair play to him, and like all the best at Wolves. Dean Henderson had an unbelievable game, probably his best game for the club so far. So Henderson kept us in it, and Eze did what he needed. So I thought it did well, but like it did show that we were a bit short in a couple of areas, which we've only addressed maybe two or three of those.
Yeah, to Ed's point there, Palace were without five first-team players, either through injury, through not getting the deal done or getting ready to play from the transfer market, or in Chalobah's case, not being eligible to play against their transfer or their parent club, I should say. So definitely a little shorthanded, and hopefully the last time we will be so shorthanded across the season. Let's go into that. You talked about Mitchell a little bit, so let's talk about that goal. Five goals conceded by Crystal Palace so far this season. Five goals were in a counter situation down Crystal Palace's left flank. That's where each of them were initiated. So for me, when you're having that many things, it's no longer a coincidence. It's a pattern. So Bobby, let's throw you into this one. What did you see on that goal, and what could we possibly do to address that situation from continuing to happen?
Yeah, well, I actually thought it was poor from Mark and Mateta, personally. I think Mark made that long bursting run and then played the ball into Mateta's feet. Mateta lost a jaw, and then they were just away. I think we committed too many players forward in attack, and I think we've done that for pretty much every goal we've conceded this season, which is... I think it comes with Glasner's system that you're going to concede goals like that, personally, because you try and play that high pressing front footed football all the time. So ultimately, we're going to have to come to terms with conceding goals like that. But I just thought it was a little bit soft. I thought Hughes got totally done by Madueke, and I just think it was far too easy.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent in the 5-5 principle of having five primary players whose job it is to attack and five primary players whose job it is to stand and stymie against the counter. And we saw that last year a bit, where we would have one wing back stay back along with Lerma or whoever was that more defensive of the central midfielders, plus the three central defenders. That gives you that five. This season, we're really not seeing that as much. We're seeing a lot more numbers going forward. Like you said, if Gahey makes that run forward, then either Hughes or Mitchell need to drop back and kind of protect him to do so. Neither of them did, and that's why there was that big opening. Will Hughes in particular, I think he didn't have the best of performances. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, but I think he was set up to fail a little bit in that he's more of a pressing kind of being a pest type player that's going to work in the counter press, work in the high press, not so much a holding midfielder. So what we saw was Cech Decore's inclusion right after halftime, not at halftime. And it kind of changed the match a little bit. So Cech probably had one of his better performances that we saw since his return from injury. Ed, how did you feel seeing Decore back out there doing Decore type things that we're so used to?
Yeah, I love him. I mean, he was being linked with a £70 million move until the injury came last year, which obviously brought him out for a long time. I think Will Hughes is beloved by the squad and a really great character to have around. People love him. He was great. He's a great character to be, just at the training ground and keeps everyone laughing. But I think we have two better defensive midfielders that aren't starting right now. I think Lerma and Decore do that job better. I think Decore came on and played exceptionally well in the second half. And after the international break, my expectation would be that we'd probably see more of Decore starting alongside Wharton. At that point, that was a really good midfield. And then you feel bad for Lerma, who had a great season last year. Was a terrific signing on a free transfer. And, you can't fit them all in, which is an incredibly nice problem to have for a club of Palace's size, to have what I would say four really good Premier League central midfielders. We haven't even got a gap at centre-back that Lerma could fill now that we've got Rob Holding, who is still contracted to the club and still around, and Chalobah on a loan with an option to buy. So, yeah, it's a great problem to have. I think Decore has to be that player for us this season if we are to finish top half. Otherwise, pretty impressed.
So, yeah, I think that Lerma probably would have started in midfield on Sunday if he didn't pick up that injury, because I just thought midfield lacked pace. Obviously, Decore couldn't have started two games in the space of the week. So it would have lent itself to Lerma to have played just to provide that extra breaking up a play. And as I said a moment ago, pace, because I just think every time an attacker ran at Hughes, they would just pass him. I mean, the winger would be on the halfway line and then they would make it into the penalty area, but Hughes would still be trying to tackle him on the halfway line. I mean, he was just so slow. He couldn't react to anything. He was just all over the place. It was a really disappointing performance. But like you said, I think he was set up to foul in a way because it's just not his kind of game.
Yeah, and it's not his profile. Like we spoke of Lerma and Decore, their profile is to protect the counter, protect against the back line from any opening situations like that. So just having him there, maybe not the most fair to him, but definitely was an improvement when Decore came on. And one thing that Decore added to this squad was he has that defensive prowess where we didn't need Kamada to drop back and defend. Let's face it, we haven't seen much great things about Kamada's defensive abilities, not what he was brought in for primarily anyway, so it's okay. But when Decore came on, it freed him up a bit to allow him to kind of get into free spaces, get into pockets, and play that long outlet down the right flank to Daniel Munoz, who is our more attacking, more aggressive of the wingbacks. So let's talk about Munoz for a little bit. People that know me well know I'm a big fan of his, but Ed, how did you think his performance was?
Man, I mean, I love him. When we signed him, I spoke to a friend of mine who owns a club in Belgium, and I asked him about Munoz, and he said he's really good, and this guy doesn't give out a ton of praise. So I was pretty bullish on what Munoz could do. Blown away when he came in last season. Obviously, the second half of the season, he completely changed how the team looked, really. I think he was a bit tired after the Copa America and after the Brentford game, we were chatting in the pub around the corner from the stadium, and there was a feeling there that, last season he would have been maybe five yards wider and 10 yards further up most of the time, and he was giving himself a bit more of a cushion to recover. But Munoz is absolutely crucial to what we do. He's also probably, surprisingly, our best player in the air, I think. He's got an incredible jump. He always seems to win headers. But he's absolutely crucial to how we play now. And I think there are actually moments against Chelsea when someone didn't spot him and he had the overlap and he was firing down that flank. So really impressed with him again. And the only thing I care about with him is, one, he stays fit, and two, that he gets back to 100% and doesn't have too much in his legs. Because if he is out for a long period at any time, we have players who can replace him, but they can't replace what he does.
I completely agree. We saw a moment that I think we're going to see a lot of this season between a link-up with Kamada and Munoz, where Daichi Kamada started and finished the attack. He made the beautiful run, pass to Munoz, who was running down the flank, found him on a cutback and Kamada was crashing into the box, got a shot off, and it was a great save. But it was an example of what we can see when these players start to have some more chemistry with each other, have some more fitness, which is going to be important. And I think that's a good chance for us to talk about the international break here. We have 2 weeks together. Most of these guys didn't have the summer together to get to know each other, to get to understand how to bring the best of each other's game out. So how important is this international break right now? Ed, let's go to you for that.
Yeah, I mean, how many players are going away? That's always this international break is one of those that I always found super annoying, quite honestly. You just get the season going, you get to the window stop, the close of the window, and then everyone disappears for two usually pretty pointless games. Either it's like one friendly and one qualifier, but you're so far away from a tournament that it feels like it's wasted everyone's time. I wouldn't be averse to them consolidating a September and October international breaks into like a slightly longer gap in the calendar. But yeah, I think you get everyone together. You know, the guys who aren't going to an international break, you can verse them in the system and try and work out who's going to play where. But ultimately, it's just more time to condition the players, more time to make sure that we've had so many different players off doing different things this summer. There's kind of an equalizing process that needs to happen. I think mainly with, you know, the physiological stuff. So get the sports science team around them and focus on that stuff. I think people are okay with the tactical instructions now. You know, the other thing I would say, I'd like this season, which we didn't have as much last year, the set pieces have been really creative. It's such a huge thing. If you can add 5 or 10 goals a season through set pieces, it's the difference between, you know, a relegation battling team and a team that finishes 11th or 12th. Every goal in the Premier League is worth something like £3 million. If you break it down. So if you can add 5 goals a season, you know, it's a really significant addition. So I've loved what they're doing with, you know, the different set pieces. And if you can work on that and that adds goals over the season, then I think that's time well spent.
Bobby, who do you think needs this break most?
Mateta, probably. I think he's knackered. He's played a lot of football recently. Adam Wharton as well has been carrying a bit of an injury, but it still remains to be seen whether he'll go on England under 21 duty or not. But I mean, in an ideal world, he would have a week off alongside Mateta. I think this international break is really, really disruptive, as Ed said. Palace could have as many as 10 players away on international duty, which includes new signing Matt Turner. I don't like it. I think the players are overworked enough as it is, and I don't think there is any real need for it. And ultimately, Palace aren't going to be able to settle the new signings into the squad, etc., because there'll be so many players away. They'll be limited to how much work they can do. The South American players won't be back until the Thursday before the Leicester game. So that means they've got, what, 2 days or less than 2 days to do their prep for a huge Premier League tie at Selhurst Park, because, you know, if Palace really want to push onto the top half of the table, these are the games you have to win, and you have to win convincingly. So, yeah, I don't like the international break. I don't think it's going to benefit us at all. I think, if anything, it will probably hinder us. And, yeah, it's just not ideal.
If I can be the voice of sunshine, as I'm wont to do, and play a little devil's advocate with this international break, I do think the one positive thing is that it does allow these new signings to get a chance to have some pressureless training, you know, where there's not a match on the line, there's not 3 points on the line, and they're able to kind of gel and mesh. Because to my knowledge, save for maybe Kamada, I'm not sure, I don't think any of those new guys that we brought in on permanence are going to be leaving. So it does allow them to have some time together. Go ahead.
It's who they're having the time together with, isn't it? Because if most of your starting squad are away, it's just going to be a behind closed doors reserve friendly. And I don't think that really helps anyone when you've just got your season started and actually put in a pretty decent performance away to Chelsea, and you just want to use that now to kick on this week, have a nice week training, a solid match day -1, and then go into a big game against Leicester. That would be ideal. I just find it really disruptive, and there's really no need for it.
There will be some club routines and rituals that it's beneficial for those new signings to be able to engage with and begin without the pressure of, you know, those first team starters, maybe, you know, keeping them away from a spot in it. friendly of the sort during that break. Set piece routines is one. You know, general day-to-day Crystal Palace activities, whatever those may be, or another. Sorry for the vagueness on that, but wanting to sort of take a more positive spin on it. Yes, it's, I think, most frustrating with the South American players, given sort of how long that keeps them out and how that typically does affect their fitness. Typically, we've seen Lerma pick up an injury on international break, and that's been frustrating. Munoz has had a couple of scares too. And when we look at it, it's what, Eze, Henderson, Gehi, Munoz, Lerma, Turner. Am I missing anyone there?
You got the three England boys, the two Colombians, possibly Wharton on 21s, Turner and Richards is Richards. Eight. When I quickly tossed it up a minute ago, I got to 10. Riyad with Morocco.
He won't be going because of his ACL or MCL.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Kamada, is has Japan got a games?
Uncertain, to be honest.
So
not
it
sure.
could be as many as 9.
Right. I still want to make the point that it's good to get Glasner to also know the players that aren't going out, because there are a few players in there that he hasn't really seen. Doucouré is actually one. Chalobah, obviously. Saar, I think, in a starting position, which he didn't really get in preseason. Nketi is obviously the big one. Lacroix, he's more familiar with, and I think he's hopefully back from that foot injury by now, but it'll be good to get him minutes. Something that I'm really looking forward to, and Ed spoke about this with our sort of increased set piece expertise, or our focus on that and trying to improve our output from there, is height is something we seriously invested in the transfer window. I think only Nketiah was under 6 foot of our signings this summer. You know, Chadi Riyad is a unit. Kamada is tall for a player in his position. Chalobah is especially tall. Lacroix as well. You know, we've brought in some really tall and physical players. And I know, Ed, you were feeling kind of, you're questioning the role of Chalobah, especially because there's not an option or an obligation to buy it. But something I think he gives us this season is first that height, and second, an ability to play, I'm hoping, in sort of the center of that back three to push up a little bit. And something I've noticed in the Glasner system is, because you have two midfielders and a sort of separation between attack and defense, if one midfielder, typically Wharton, gets beaten and it's Hughes next to him or someone's further up the pitch, it's suddenly someone on it's suddenly their opposition attack on our defense. There's no real in-between man. And what you get by signing Lacroix and Chalobah is you get Chalobah, someone who can and has played in sort of CDM before and play a more holding role, who's more comfortable stepping forward to make another tackle further up the pitch. And Gehi and Lacroix as faster players on the recovery, who are adept sort of stoppers, if you want to use that term, to those more familiar with, let's say, Football Manager. I don't want to sort of reduce it to that. But I think what Chalobah gives us is a combination of pace, strength and height that we haven't really had in a player until we've got Lacroix and now Chalobah. And the difference between them should allow us to maybe close up the gaps that we see and that make us more vulnerable to those counterattacks that we were talking about earlier. Similarly, that pace that all three of those players have should help cover for Tyrick Mitchell and Doucouré coming in. So I think we've made a lot of good decisions to sign those players, and Glasner can kind of use this period of time to work out what that best arrangement of that back three will be, with Chalobah in the middle or on the right, and Lacroix on the same question. Where does Richards fit in, if at all? So yeah, I think it gives Glasner a chance to give these players more familiarity with our strategy and work out kind of what he wants to do with the many players we've brought in, because it's been a serious change of an oil change, if you will, of our team.
Yeah, one thing that our outside center backs did a very good job with last year, and you start to see it a lot more when Doucouré came on in the second half against Chelsea, was in those situations where maybe they're, you know, the ball gets past Wharton when he's a little more forward. Richards and Klein especially are very prone to getting forward and stymieing that ball right at the plan of attack there. They get right to it. They jump up almost right next to where Doucouré plays, almost forming another double pivot there and stopping that ball from getting there. When Doucouré wasn't in the game, or when Lerma's not in the game, there's somebody not in the middle, and we can't make that risk, because if we get beat, there's no one there to cover behind. So I think that someone like Chalobah, he has the tools that could play the game the same way that Klein played. I think he has a lot of those same abilities, but, you know, nothing against Nathaniel Klein. I think I love the way he plays, but, you know, he's getting older and we can't really rely on him to play 38 anymore. So having Chalobah come in and be able to play that kind of role that you're talking about, I think that's very important. So we have the international break. We go back to Selhurst Park against a very winnable match against newly promoted Leicester City. Let's go to Ed. Ed, what's one thing that you would like to see from Palace that will give you confidence moving forward in this Leicester match?
A clean sheet, probably. We've not really discussed it, but the defence has looked a bit of a weakness so far this season. I mean, conceded 2 in the opener, 2 in the second game, just 1 against Chelsea, but they create a lot. You know, it could have been more than that. So, yeah, I think a clean sheet. Obviously need to beat them, but I think the worst thing I could possibly see would be Jordan Ayew scoring. Did Edouard go there in the end, or was it?
He did end up going to Leicester, but thankfully will not be eligible to play against us
because it's a loan, right? Yeah. So I mean, look, Jordan Ayew scoring as they beat us 1-0 is about as bad as it could possibly be, I think. What I would really love to see is nice clean sheet. Decore starting alongside Wharton, dominant display, and then maybe even an academy kid coming off the bench and playing unbelievably well in the last 20 minutes, so we just get an extra player out of nowhere. That's like the dream scenario. But yeah, like, you know, if Eddie Nketiah can get a goal and look like he fits in with what we're doing, you know, that relationship with Eze, we haven't discussed it today, but like, it seems those two are, you know, close friends. They played together at youth level. I think that if those two can strike up a nice little relationship and you've got JP around there as well, that probably feels like our front three. And I'd be pretty excited to see them all get on the score sheet against Leicester in a comfortable win.
Yeah, for me, and I think that's great stuff, Ed. I completely agree. For me, I'd like to see us continue to build off of where we're heading. Despite not having much possession, despite not having a huge percentage of field tilt against Chelsea, they seem to really dominate in those aspects. We still had more touches in the opponent's penalty area than they did. I think it was 23-20 or something like that. So despite not having a load of the ball, we are still playing direct. We are still playing vertically, and we were getting the ball inside their box quite often, but the shots just weren't coming. We seem to be taking one too many touches, or seem to just have an errant shot go wide of the goal, not on target. So for me, what I would like to see is us to continue that, continue being aggressive and direct, but having the XG for chances be a lot higher than it was in this last match, because I think the more chances we have, obviously the more goals we're going to be able to score. We're getting the ball in the areas we want them to. We just need to start making and taking those chances. Bobby, what's one thing you would like to see in this?
The one thing I would not like to see is Jordan Ayew scoring, obviously. It would be even worse if it was a screamer like he pulled out in the cup. But no, so I agree. I think a clean sheet is probably what's needed. I do think we need to shore up that defence, and I think that probably will come because we're going to have two new players in the back line. Obviously, Maxon Lacroix, who's a very quick and solid defender, I would say, and Trevor Chalobah, who you kind of know what you're getting from what you saw of him at Chelsea last season. I mean, Chelsea fans did not want him to leave the football club. They widely regarded him as one of their best defenders. So I think that's a really good coup we've got on loan there, and it'll be nice to see him playing alongside Gehi and Lacroix against Leicester. So I just, my hope for the game is actually that they will start. And then Nketiah goal, it's a bit of a weird one because this is not a striker scoring for Palace on their debut, as we saw with Odson Edouard, isn't necessarily a good thing. It lures you into that false sense of security.
So as we talked about, with the international break, we do know that some first team players are going to be gone. And that is an opportunity for any of our young academy players to impress Glasner and possibly make a name for themselves. So going into this break, Bruno, who are the candidates that might be able to impress?
Well, I think there are going to be more openings in our forward line than there are going to be anywhere else on the pitch. Obviously, Franco Ume has been the most consistent trainer with our squad. He's a forward, but has been kind of played as a wide back and is being converted into a left wing back by Glasner to potentially deputise for Tyrick Mitchell in the case of emergencies. I think the club would like to see him loaned out in January. So he's one potential name, but I wouldn't think he'd be likely to feature if Tyrick Mitchell is fit. I think for me, the most gaping hole in our forward line is a faster player with trickery in his skill set. We're missing Mateus França due to injury, and that creates a space for someone willing to make an impact off the bench with pace and skill. And we have a player like that in our academy, someone who is certainly raw, but has stepped up from the 18s to the under 21s really, really well, and is getting the same kind of goals and assists that he was getting at the level below it. And that's Ashraq Benoni, who, you know, right-footed, obviously can play anywhere across that front three, whether that's left wing, striker, right wing, scored in preseason for us. Yet again, he's very raw. You know, he loves to take players on, loves every little trick in the book. You know, he's doing back heels and flicks and Rabona crosses, Travella crosses, probably does those more than regular crosses. He's not, you know, ready, in my opinion, for the Premier League. He's still raw and you can see that. But if there's any player that you'd kind of be scared running at you off the bench, is a 18-year-old kid who's going to do something you've never even dreamt of against you to try and get past you. And if Glasner needs sort of a wild card to throw on, there is no better candidate in our academy than him. Obviously, when France returns, he won't be in the picture, but I'd say that he's the player you'd want to see. Rashawn Mathurin is another one who's been on the verges, but unfortunately picked up an injury, and that's why he wasn't loaned out in the end, and obviously didn't make it on the bench when he otherwise would have against Chelsea. But yeah, between those two players, you've got, you know, a balance of skills between someone who's more of a creator and someone who's better at fashioning a chance themselves to finish. But, you know, there's plenty of players in our academy to choose from. Jesse Derry's another in our under-18s who's making a case to be promoted. So yeah, I think it's an exciting time to have academy talents to pick from, if I'm Oliver Glasner.
Yeah, and it's something that we've been told to be patient with as we built this Category 1 academy, and we're slowly getting to the point we can see the fruits of that labor. So it's definitely an exciting thing to see, definitely excited moving forward. And with the addition of those players in the future and our new signings, I think we have a lot of reason to be positive for the upcoming year after this international break. So without further ado, we'll wrap it up from there. Bobby, as always, thanks for coming on. We appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Really enjoyed it.
And Ed, can't thank you enough. We know you're a very busy man, and we really do appreciate you taking the time out of your day to come talk Palace with us. And if you do have anything you want to plug or anything you got going on, now's the chance you can. The floor is yours, so to speak.
No, not a problem. Always happy to come on. Anyone who's interested in the business of football, me and a couple of other people who kind of work behind the scenes in football have started a twice weekly newsletter called Footbiz. Everything else comes on there as behind the paywall, but the newsletter is free to read. Hopefully that interests you. If you work within football, if you're just a fan who's interested about what happens behind the scenes, then feel free to subscribe to that and help us grow.
Awesome. And my co-host, as always, Bruno, thank you for holding it down for us and giving us some insight.
Of course, man. I think we're approaching a light at the end of the tunnel of what has been a bit of a rough start to the season. But, you know, we now have a better frame of what Crystal Palace will look like. And, you know, with Oliver Glasner at the helm, anything's possible. So we'll see what happens over the international break. But hopefully by the next time we're all together and back talking Crystal Palace, we'll have a first win of the season under our belt to discuss.
Yeah, and let me just add one little last bit of optimism here. In March, we had an international break with Glasner. They went to Spain, they drilled, they got fit, they came back, and they went on an unbeaten run to end the season. I'm not saying we're going to have an unbeaten run to end the season. That would be quite a
feat. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Quite a feat, it would be. But
we still wouldn't be able to win the league, because I don't think City are going to lose a game between now and the end. Yeah,
we'd probably draw 30 of them, but in 11th or something. But hey, there's reason to be positive with it. I think he's shown that having these guys at his disposal for 2 weeks, whoever's there is going to get better, is going to get more fit, going to get more chemistry with each other. And those are all good things. So as always, guys, appreciate you all coming on. Remember, go ahead and follow our socials. Visit palaceway.com for articles of about the academy, about match review, about anything Crystal Palace. Thank you so much for joining us. Up the Palace.